This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the massacre of the Ducreau family that occurred in 1961 on a yacht named the Bluebell? So first I'll start with the background of a man named Julian Harvey. It is believed he was responsible for the massacre. I'll move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Julian Harvey was born in 1917 in New York. His parents divorced when he was only one. He lived alone with his mother until she remarried when he was age six. Julian had a problem with stammering when he was young. It went away for a while, but returned later in life. His stepfather was wealthy. He gave him his own sailboat. However, when the Depression hit, his parents were devastated financially. They sent him to live with his wealthy aunt and uncle in Scarsdale, New York, when he was 13. This couple took good care of Julian. Julian married when he was in high school. The relationship was over within a year. The marriage was annulled. He graduated from high school in 1937 and started working as a door-to-door salesperson, but he was too nervous to do the job. When someone answered the first door he knocked on, he ran away. It's easy to see how this would impede sales performance. He went to college and studied engineering, but 2 years later, the United States entered World War II. Julian didn't wait to be drafted. Rather, he joined the Army Air Corps, which would later become the Air Force. At some point around this time, Julian married again and had a son. The couple divorced in 1945. Julian Harvey flew airplanes like the B-24 bomber in World War II and the F-86 Sabre in the Korean War. He had received both the Distinguished Flying Cross and the Air Medal for action, although he also had a reputation for crashing aircraft. He married for a third time sometime around 1948. The couple had a son named Lance. In 1949, Julian was in a suspicious car accident where he drove over a bridge into the water. Julian escaped, but his wife and mother-in-law drowned. He said that he jumped out of the vehicle when it was still in the air, yet the divers reported that all the doors were closed and the driver's side window was rolled down. Regardless of the condition of the doors, it's almost impossible to believe that somebody could exit a vehicle while it was driving off of a bridge into a body of water. If he was somehow able to do that, he would have had to known he was driving off that bridge. A few weeks after this incident, Julian was living with another woman, so it doesn't seem as though he was too broken up about his wife dying. Still in the Air Force, Julian was transferred to Texas in 1950. There he married his fourth wife, although she believed she was the second. They divorced in 1953 after Julian told her he didn't love her anymore. Julian married again. This was number five. The couple bought a yacht together. Within a year, Julian ran aground on a wreck of a Navy battleship in the Chesapeake Bay. So he destroyed his yacht. This was likely insurance fraud. Witnesses say that the wreck was well marked and that Julian kept moving the vessel near it when there was no need to. Julian bought another boat not long after this. Julian was given a medical discharge from the Air Force in 1958. He had been injured a few times and had severe anxiety. That same year, his fifth wife filed for divorce, citing extreme mental cruelty. While the divorce was still pending, Julian took his vessel out to Cuba. A fire broke out, which consumed it. He was rescued and once again collected the insurance money. He then bought another vessel. In 1959, his divorce finalized, and he sold the vessel he had purchased not long before. Around this time, Julian moved to Florida, first to Miami, then to Fort Lauderdale. In Fort Lauderdale, 44-year-old Julian Harvey did not have difficulty attracting women. He was quite popular. He met a 34-year-old woman named Mary Dean. This couple would marry in July of 1961, so this was his sixth wife. As this was going on in Florida, we move over to Green Bay, Wisconsin, the home of the Ducreau family. It comprised five members, 40-year-old Arthur his 38-year-old wife Jean, and their three children, Brian, Terry Joe, and Renee, ages 14, 11, and 7. Arthur had served as a medic in the Navy during World War II. He worked as an optometrist after being discharged. He had a dream of taking his family on a year-long sailing adventure around the world. This was ambitious, and he wasn't sure how the family would tolerate it, especially the children, so he decided to take a practice run. He was going to take the family on a week-long cruise from the Florida Keys to the Bahamas. In November of 1961, the family arrived in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and Arthur paid $515 to charter a sailboat called the Bluebell. This vessel was a catch. It had two masts. The main mast was toward the bow. It was 60 feet tall. And the other was toward the stern. It was 45 feet tall. The vessel was 60 feet long. Arthur also hired Julian Harvey for $100 a day. Julian was going to function as the captain. This was the first time Julian had ever taken a charter like this. Julian's wife, Mary Dean, was also going to work on the vessel. She was going to function as the cook. The Bluebell departed on Wednesday, November 8, in the early afternoon. The vessel traveled to several destinations in the Bahamas. The family engaged in a number of activities like snorkeling, spearfishing, and buying souvenirs. While visiting Sandy Point on November 12, Arthur told a commissioner there that the trip had been a once-in-a-lifetime vacation, and he and his family had thoroughly enjoyed it. The vessel continued sailing in the Bahamas and returned to Sandy Point. At this point, the vessel departed, ostensibly headed back to Florida. So this was going to be the last leg of the journey. The next day, November 13, at about 12:35 p.m., an oil tanker called the Gulf Lion came within visual distance of a dinghy drifting in the ocean. One of the crew members saw Julian Harvey waving his arms frantically and shouting, "Help! I have a dead baby on board." The crew members of the oil tanker rescued Julian Harvey. They also retrieved the body of Renee Dupereau. Julian had misidentified Renee as Terry Joe, causing some confusion initially. Here's the story that Julian told the crew members of the oil tanker. On the day before, at 8:30 p.m., the Bluebell was hit by a squall out of nowhere. The vessel keeled over. The main mast snapped and penetrated the hull. It slammed straight down like a nail being struck by a hammer. In the process, the mast severed a gas line. Several on board the vessel were injured. Because the mast had broken, there was loose rigging on the deck. Julian and Arthur were separated from the other people on board the vessel. Julian tried to reach a pair of wire cutters that were in the cabin so he could cut through the rigging, but a fire broke out because of that broken gas line. Julian tried to put out the fire with two different fire extinguishers, but he was not successful. He was forced to climb into a dinghy and escape. He failed to rescue any of the people on board, but he was able to rescue a lot of supplies and a raft that he towed behind the dinghy. He retrieved Renee's body as it floated by. He tried to save her, but she was already dead. He kept the body in the dinghy out of respect. Julian was transported to Nassau, which is the capital of the Bahamas. Investigators asked him a number of questions. They found a few circumstances of his story to be suspicious. The dinghy was well stocked with survival supplies. Julian was calm and relaxed. There was a lighthouse near where the incident allegedly occurred. They were not aware of any sea squall that night and did not see any fires. Once in the dinghy, Harvey did not direct it to the nearest island, which was only a few miles away. Julian never attempted to use the flares that he had in an emergency kit in the raft. He said he never even thought of them. Julian said that Arthur was steering the vessel during the incident and directed it into the wind. This, of course, would only fan the flames of the fire and would have been an unusual move for Arthur, who was also an experienced sailor. Ultimately, the authorities could not prove that Julian was lying, although they strongly suspected he was. They sent him to Miami to meet with the United States Coast Guard. Now moving to November 16. This is 3 days after Julian was rescued. A Greek freighter that went by the name Captain Theo was sailing in the Northwest Providence Channel when its second officer spotted Terry Joe floating on a small raft. Initially, he thought it was a fishing vessel, but soon realized that it was a young girl. The crew of the Captain Theo rescued Terry Jo. She had difficulty identifying herself because her voice was hoarse, but she was able to do it. She told the crew members that the vessel she was on sank, and she had been floating for several days. Terry Jo had severe sunburn, dehydration, and exposure. She slipped into unconsciousness. The crew members of the Captain Theo called the Coast Guard for a rescue. A helicopter was dispatched and transported Terry Jo to a hospital in Miami.
You might be surprised to know that not all serial killers are straight, cisgender white men. And the victims of true crime are not a monolith either. She's Wendy and I'm Beth, and together we host Fruit Loop's Serial Killers of Color, a true crime podcast.
Together we take deep dives into the true crime stories about marginalized and minoritized perps and victims that often go untold.
We also provide the context and nuance that these stories deserve. At Fruit Loops, we're serving up true crime with a side of history, society, culture, and some fun.
Listen to Fruit Loop Serial Killers of Color on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Bill Huffman, and I am a former Cleveland news producer, and I am now the host of the podcast, Who Killed? I began the show focusing on the unsolved murder of Amy Mihaljevic, and now each week I explore a different case with a focus on some of the victims who don't get the attention they deserve. I have a deep catalog of over 225 episodes, so there is a guarantee there will be something for you. Who Killed is an Evergreen Podcasts, Killer Podcasts, and Slow Burn Media production. Subscribe today wherever you get your favorite shows.
On November 17, Julian Harvey was in the middle of an interview with the U.S. Coast Guard. Investigators told him that Terry Jo had been rescued the day before and that she would survive. Julian said, "Isn't that wonderful?" Julian told investigators that he was tired and needed to talk to his wife's family. They allowed him to leave. Julian drove to the Sandman Motel on Biscayne Boulevard and checked in using the name John Monroe. He paid cash for a room. He wrote a 2-page note before bringing it into his life using a razor blade. A maid found his body about 2 hours later. The note was addressed to a friend from his time in the military. Julian requested that his 14-year-old son be taken care of, and he requested that he be buried at sea. This occurred a few days later. Terry Jo had recovered enough by November 20 to provide investigators a detailed version of events. Here's what Terry Jo told them. The Bluebell started its return trip to Fort Lauderdale late on November 12. At about 9 p.m., Terry Jo walked to the lower cabin to go to sleep. So we see the vessel was being sailed at night. Everyone else was on the deck. Later in the evening, she heard her brother screaming and yelling for her father. She also heard thumping noises. Terry Jo walked back up to the deck to find the bodies of her mother and brother lying in a pool of blood in the main cabin near the galley. Continuing toward the deck, she saw Julian Harvey carrying a bucket. It may have actually been a gas can. Julian pushed her below deck, screaming, quote, "Get back down there," unquote. She was back in her cabin for about 15 minutes when she noticed oil and water coming in on the floor. Julian entered her cabin carrying a rifle. Later, it was determined this was a .22 caliber rifle that he had taken on board. He looked right at her, but turned around and walked back to the deck. Terry Jo said that she heard some type of hammering sound. She walked up to the deck to investigate and found the dinghy floating on the port side of the vessel. Julian was standing on the deck. She asked Julian if the boat was sinking. He replied yes. Julian asked her if the dinghy was loose. She said she didn't know. He told her to hold the rope that was attached to the dinghy, which she did. He went to get something, but by the time he returned, the rope had slipped through Terry Jo's fingers. Julian jumped overboard and swam out to the dinghy. Terry Jo remembered that there was a small raft lashed to the deck. As the Bluebell started to sink, she untied it and threw it overboard. For a moment, a piece of rope attached to that raft was caught on the Bluebell and started to pull the raft underwater. Terry Jo managed to get it free, and of course the raft floated back to the surface. Terry Jo climbed into the raft. She had no supplies with her. According to Terry Jo, when she was floating away, the Bluebell was not on fire, The mast was not broken, and the sea was calm. She would remain on that raft without water or food for 3.5 days. Terry Jo returned to Wisconsin. She would eventually marry and have 3 children. During an interview 49 years after the murders, Terry Jo said that when people reflect on what happened to her, she hopes they'll think to themselves that she has gone with her life as opposed to feeling sorry for her. Now moving to my analysis. Because Julian died, he was never charged in connection with the incident aboard the Bluebell. Many people, of course, believe that he was guilty of multiple homicides. There's no way to know for certain, but the evidence against him is convincing. Let's take a look at it. There is no plausible alternate theory for what happened. Julian's story about what happened during the incident did not make any sense. Terry Jo's account strongly points to homicide. Julian bringing an end to his life suddenly after hearing Terry Jo was alive looks more than a little suspicious. The loss of the Bluebell was actually the 3rd time in 6 years that Julian lost a ship. Not long before the murders, he took out a $20,000 life insurance policy on Mary Dean's life. Again, this was his 6th wife. It had a double indemnity clause for accidental death. The distance that Julian traveled in the dinghy suggests he had propulsion. He probably dropped the engine in the ocean and sank the gas cans not long before being rescued. The crew members of the Gulf Lion remember Julian sinking a gas can right before they rescued him. Considering the evidence, was Julian Harvey guilty? I think he was guilty of murdering his wife and the Dupereau family, in addition to the attempted murder of Terry Jo Dupereau. The most probable theory is that he only intended to kill his wife, so that was probably his plan, like he was going to stab her or strangle her and throw her overboard to collect the insurance. He figured the family members would be his witnesses, like Mary just went missing sometime in the night, no one killed her, no one knew what happened, it was just an accident. Therefore, the double indemnity would kick in, and Julian would receive $40,000. Something went wrong in his plan, and he decided to take out all the witnesses. He didn't kill Terry Jo because she let go of the rope. He had to dive into the water and swim out to the dinghy, or risk not being able to reach it at all. He probably didn't come back to finish her off because he figured she would drown when the Bluebell sank. He vastly underestimated his victim. What about personality factors in this case? Like many people who are outwardly successful and then commit murder, the adjectives used to describe Julian fell into 2 disparate groups. On the one side, people found him to be charismatic, well-mannered, likable, handsome, sophisticated, heroic, ideal, and dashing. On the other side, people thought he was a sociopath, immoral. He had no empathy. He was self-centered, entitled, envious, arrogant, anxious, and creepy. What I find interesting about Julian is that in some ways he seemed like a typical grandiose narcissist, dominating, sensation-seeking, and assertive, but at other times he appeared to be more like a vulnerable narcissist, anxious and fearful. Not what somebody would expect for an individual who flew fighters and bombers. When he would get anxious, his stammering would return, he would exhibit facial tics, and his self-confidence would decrease. When he was in the Air Force, people would often make fun of him, including his subordinates. There were times in his service with the Air Force when he was heroic and courageous, but other times he would find problems with aircraft so that he could miss dangerous missions, like he had a lot of mysterious occurrences. For example, in Korea, he had a phenomenal number of mysterious engine failures that required him to return to base without engaging in combat. In addition to narcissism and psychopathy, Harvey appeared to have a lack of insight. He kept committing obvious crimes, like insurance fraud, assuming that his reputation as a war hero and his attractiveness would discourage any investigation. Largely, he was correct. With this in mind, here's a potential personality profile for Julian Harvey. When I conceptualize personality, I often use the 5-factor model. I remember the 5 factors through the acronym OCEAN. Openness to experience, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. Julian appeared to be mid-range in openness to experience. He wasn't particularly creative or invested in fantasy. We see mid-range conscientiousness. He had some impulsivity, but those other times when he could demonstrate a good work ethic, we see a high level of extroversion. He was assertive and sensation-seeking, low agreeableness. He did not have a lot of trust for people. He valued competition over cooperation. And we see high neuroticism. He was angry and anxious, but he was able to present as being low in neuroticism. So people viewed him as quite calm and stable emotionally. From Julian Harvey's perspective, the lives of other people did not matter. He was willing to kill everybody on board the Bluebell in order to collect insurance money. It seems likely that Julian would have committed more crimes in the future, perhaps other homicides. Terry Jo's amazing journey of survival not only saved her life, it prevented Julian from continuing on his trail of destruction. One of the themes I see with Julian Harvey is how everyone and everything he came in contact with was destroyed. He was married 6 times. 2 of those wives he probably murdered. The other ones were not happy because of his abusive behavior. When he flew in the Air Force, he destroyed a number of aircraft, not necessarily enemy aircraft, but his aircraft. We see with boats, he destroyed 3 of those. It's likely that all 3 of those destructions were intentional. And of course, we see that he wiped out the Dupereau family. So really, through Julian's life, he just destroyed people and objects one after the other, with no regard for how his behavior affected other people. He was a versatile criminal, willing to commit murder, willing to commit insurance fraud, willing to harm people in other ways. He was really like a wrecking ball that just moved throughout these different people's lives. For much of the time, he was able to stay disguised as an ideal romantic partner, a war hero, a competent ship captain. People just couldn't see what he was like. They couldn't understand his true nature until it was too late.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
Science, science, science! Hello, podcast fans. Want to get weird with us? Come check out the Mad Scientist Podcast. We are a weekly show that looks at the history, philosophy, and hard facts behind your biggest paranormal questions.
Did the government really pay for a psychic spy program?
Yes!
Is it true that surgery got its start in grave robbing?
Yes!
Can a roller coaster really kill you?
Legally, we can't say so for sure, but sometimes... Yes! Join myself, Chris Cogswell, and my co-host, Marie Mayhew, as we examine the science, philosophy, and history behind the strange and unusual. All to discover what's possible and plausible versus what's, well, just made up. Check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Mad Scientist Podcast.